This podcast is a proud member of the LAM Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind a Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
I know what you're thinking. Mine's bigger than yours, right? It's not fair. Throw it away. All right. They're coming! The rats are coming! Thousands of them!
Tell me about Disneyland.
They got tons of popcorn there.
Yeah.
And all you gotta do is go climb a tree to go eat it.
It was a night like any other night. Then something happened.
Oh, good Lord. It's unbelievable. It's horrible.
Hey, wait. There's something weird here.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, my name's Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, post-apocalyptic wasteland, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1960s to today. Check us out at reallyawfulmovies.com, part of the Crypt TV family.
From the deepest, darkest South American jungle. Just kidding, from our downtown Toronto headquarters. Here's episode 80, 1980s, Cannibal Ferox.
Cannibal Ferox, directed by Umberto Lenzi, a.k.a.
Yes.
Make Them Die Slowly.
And the man responsible for one of our favorites, Nightmare City.
Yep, and a couple of the cannibal movies as well. And interestingly, I mean, these cannibal films that came out of Italy in the late 70s, early 80s, I mean, they would turn these things out, and these films are just vile. Vile movies, taboo shattering, extremely hard to defend, but they occupy a place in a niche in exploitation film. Some people love them, some people hate them. One of the reasons why people do hate them is because of the animal cruelty that's rife in all these movies. And most of them are just exploitative, and you know, there's only one that really is a piece of art, and that's Cannibal Holocaust, although that one has the most vile animal cruelty I've ever seen in my entire life. Any card-carrying member of PETA, any vegan, and you will not want to go near these movies.
No.
Most especially Cannibal Holocaust. That one was directed by Ruggero Deodato in 1980, and then 1 year later comes Cannibal Ferox.
Yes, and in addition to the copious animal cruelty, there's the taboo-shattering, obviously, cannibalism, from which this genre is derived, and really is one of the last taboos. And we were talking about Alive, and how you have a rugby team that crashes in the Andes and resorts to cannibalism just to survive. And there's a famous example recently of a mystery that was just solved. It was the Franklin Expedition. In 1845, explorers trying to find the Northwest Passage got lost in what is Nunavut in Canada. Their ships got trapped in ice, and these poor guys had to boil the bones of their deceased compatriots in order to survive. But the key difference is these have nothing to do. These films have nothing to do with the human instinct for survival. This is pure exploitation and people who ostensibly get a joy out of cannibalism.
Well, no, I would argue though, because I mean these are, you know, tribes of the Amazon, and this is their ritual. This is their survival. They eat wild animals and they eat people.
They don't have to eat people.
Not necessarily. So yeah,
there's enough fish and whatever else.
Yeah. You might be right.
But this is definitely it's just amazing that there's people who've never heard of this genre, and yet it's its own little weird bubble of tropes and things that you come to expect from these films, and namely, whites who go to this misbegotten piece of South American jungle. And they get, arguably their comeuppance. They usually get slaughtered.
Yeah.
They have a guide. They go in where they shouldn't be.
They're usually weighing over their heads.
Yes.
They're mostly sympathetic characters, with the exception of Cannibal Holocaust, where they're absolutely vile human beings who deserve to be slaughtered. But yeah, there's that trope. You've got the whites in the jungle, you know, trying to do something in this case. But we'll get to what their purpose is in a moment or two. You got tons of nudity.
Yeah.
You got the loincloth wearing native slathered in white with like Ramones-esque haircuts.
Yes.
You know, bull haircuts.
Yeah.
You got the trips to the jungle with machete, hacking with the brush. You've got the aforementioned animal cruelty. You've got the...
The gratuitous gore and eviscerating of innards and lopping off of appendages.
And in every one of these movies, there's always the obligatory penis lopping.
Yes. It's like,
When I first saw it in Cannibal Holocaust, it's my first Cannibal movie, I was fucking shocked.
Yeah.
Like, oh my god, they just lopped off his penis. When I saw it for like the 18th time, and like, you know, I was like, okay, there you go, there's the obligatory, you know, it's like a musical number in a Disney film. Yeah. There it is, you know?
Well, we're going to hack our way through the jungle and through phalluses, I guess, as it were, with a little description of the film here, which, like, I guess, Dr. Butcher. And Cannibal Holocaust, the first cannibal film I ever saw. We start incongruously in New York City with the mob going after Mike, played by Giovanni Lombardo Radice.
Yes.
And he owes them a pile of money. And they're looking for this guy. And they're shaking down witnesses and trying to find this guy.
Well, a guy enters his apartment looking for him. And the mob are lying in wait, and they say, you know, where's Mike? Where's Mike? He's like, I just want a horse.
Horse, that's slang for heroin,
And they're like, well, he owes 100 grand, and they shoot him. And, I mean, Mike is gone. Mike is absconded.
Mike is really far gone.
Yeah. He is really far gone. We're going to find out later on in the film how far gone he is.
Yes.
But that's sort of just to set up a certain part of the plot, because next thing you know, we're in the Rio del Amazone.
Yes.
And we got two girls and a guy who are our protagonists, our heroes.
Yeah.
We got Gloria, her brother Rudy, and their friend Pat.
Yes.
And Gloria is there on an academic study for her purpose.
Yes, yes.
She wants to prove her dissertation that cannibalism is a myth foisted on by racist colonialism.
Yes.
So she's going to go into the heart of the Amazon to basically say, there's nothing here, you know?
Yes, and she's an anthropologist, and I was thinking immediately with, we podcasted Boggy Creek 2.
Mm-hmm. And the question continues.
Yeah, and she has, like that movie, she has with her people who have no business being on an academic
excursion.
Yeah, basically this alpha male machete-wielding meathead, and this headband-wearing... let's get physical, sort of 80s, blonde, who offers really little in the way of...
All she wants to do is go to the beach.
Yeah.
She has no interest whatsoever.
And this expedition is not very well planned.
Not at all.
I think the Franklin expedition was way better planned. But anyway, they go down with a jeep loaded with not tons of water or like...
useful provisions.
Yeah, or non-disposable...
beef jerky.
They have tons of whiskey.
Yes. And they're looking for the village of Manioca.
Yes.
This is the fabled village where the cannibals, according to Gloria, are purported to be, but they don't exist. Now, they're in their jeep, and they're driving along, and they're thwarted in their journey by, quote-unquote, a jaywalking iguana.
Yeah.
And it's hilarious, because in all these movies, all the animal cruelty, and all the animals that do die in horrific ways, they swerve to not kill this iguana, end up in a ditch, and that's it. The jeep is told, fuck, they gotta go on foot.
Mm-hmm.
They gotta go the rest of the journey on foot, which is hilarious, because then we have Pat saying, hey, you know, let's go on foot, and not only that, but we can maybe find that village of yours, and we can kill two pairs with one cracker. Love that line.
Yeah, it's great. And I fail to see how trudging through the brush with one machete and no provisions, like, how is that going to serve them? They could be set upon by, well, all manner of carnivorous
not only that,
felines. There's tons of poisonous snakes. There's like they're not prepared for this journey.
Not only that, but I mean, for an academic exposition, I did not see Gloria with a camera to document anything.
No, her brother had the camera. She did not. I don't know why she would not.
I did not see her with a notebook or something to record. You know,
yeah,
her findings. I mean, it was no dictaphone, nothing
to record anything.
Nothing. Mm. So as they're traipsing through the jungle, they come across a few sights that startle them. One being a native who's having a wonderful morning of gigantic, squirming, disgusting larvae. And he's just picking them up like they're fucking Fruit Loops and eating them.
Yes.
And they find that to be disgusting. Well, that's the least of the disgusting stuff they're going to be experiencing very, very shortly.
Yes, and so much for... you know, dispassionate scientific observation. One of them says, that's disgusting, let's get out of here. Mm-hmm. But meanwhile, you're an anthropologist. You're supposed to be immune to this thing. You're supposed to be studying these people. No notes are taken, like, oh, this is the practice of the locals. Mm-hmm. They eat larvae. Nope, they just, okay, let's keep moving.
but what we do see is a whole bunch of natives basically lying in wait, and why they're not besetting these...
They don't seem particularly restless.
Well, they're not restless, but there's a reason for that, which we'll come to in a moment or two. But then the film has to stop for some more obligatory animal cruelty, and we get this wonderful scene of a snake, an anaconda, crushing and eating a poor mongoose. And it's so sad. This poor little rodent just squealing out while his brain's getting crushed by this gigantic reptile.
Yeah, I was under the mistaken impression that this was just nature... Stock footage, yeah. But apparently these unscrupulous filmmakers stage this stuff.
Oh yeah. I mean, this is whenever you see animal cruelty in these Italian cannibal films, unless it's one that came out like, you know, third generation where they're really ripping things off and they're just taking scenes wholesale from other films, these were filmed entirely purposely for these movies. The most vile of all being the Turtle Sea and Cannibal Holocaust. But yeah, there's a very interesting story, Mountain of the Cannibal Gods.
With Ursula Andress, of all
Stacey
people.
And Stacey Keach, yeah. And I was watching that yesterday, and afterwards I watched an interview with the director, Sergio Stellati, who also directed a great giallo called Torso. And Blue Underground produced the movie, the DVD and the documentary, and they kept calling him out on his bullshit. Every time he would say something, they would cut and say, bullshit, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he was saying how, oh yeah, we have a scene of a snake eating a monkey, but it just so happened that we were there at that moment. I mean, this is nature. We were there trying to capture everything happening. The cameras happened to be set up. Everything.
How convenient.
It was just happenstance. Meanwhile, then they cut their scene, and they have a crawl saying, if you look at the scene frame by frame, they actually slow down frame by frame, you'll see an optical effect used to barely cover the launching mechanism, which they used to launch the monkey into the gaping maw of the snake.
Oh, my God.
So that just goes to show you the lengths of these maniacal filmmakers went to make these cannibal movies. So, they continue on into the jungle, and they come across another quite disturbing sight, and this would be a native impaled to a tree by a gigantic spiked ball.
Yeah. This is about a meter in diameter ball with bamboo spikes protruding from it that has just basically gutted this poor native woman and stuck her to a tree. Mm. They free her from there, but it's far too late. Yeah. She's done for.
And then they come across two Westerners. Well, yes. Not really. Two Italians.
Yeah, well, Western Europe.
We're playing Western Europe.
Yes, yeah.
And that's Mike and Joe. So this is now...
This is Mike, who's been fleeing mobsters in NYC, and he's down here. Mm. And we find out a little bit of his backstory.
Well, Mike proffers his whole cock and bull story that they were with some... Portuguese speaking guide. Yeah,
yeah,
and they were trying to... Mike, he is a cokehead.
Yeah.
And he doesn't hide it. He says, basically, I'd deal in emeralds, and I wanted to find emeralds and coke, and this Portuguese took us into the Amazon, and then we found this village, and they tortured us, and they killed the Portuguese, and we barely escaped our lives, and...
They ate his genitals.
Yes, indeed.
The famous line from the movie.
Yep. And as it so happens, they trudge on into the village, and they see what remains of a human being with, you know, just well decomposed and maggots crawling out of its eyes, and that's the Portuguese.
Yes.
Now, they wake up next morning, and Gloria is missing. So they go to look for her, and he's in one of the, he's fallen to a trap, and inside the trap is a wild boar. So the heroic Mike jumps in and kills the boar. Now, GLR, not GNR, GLR, Giovanni Lombardi-Ortiz, he refused to kill the boar on camera. And him and Lenzi had some words, where Lenzi said, hey, Robert De Niro would do it. And Lenzi said, Ortiz said something like, Robert De Niro would never be in this piece of shit movie.
Yes, so that, and we were talking about how we've met Giovanni Lombardi-Ortiz, and interesting guy at the conventions, but he does not care for these films. And he said in print that they're shit, and he was just doing it for a paycheck.
And when I asked him, I said, so, I heard you were completely embarrassed by your involvement in Cannibal Ferox. He goes, a fucking piece of shit. I don't want to talk about it. Vile, terrible, whatever. So there was a double, an animal-killing double used for that particular scene. But at this point, Mike's compatriot Joe passes out from a fever, and now Mike's true colors come out. We find out he's not an innocent Westerner. No. He's a fucking piece of shit. He basically pulls out a gun, because he wants to leave Joe to rot and die in the wilderness to the animals and the cannibals and what have you. And when Gloria protests, he goes, listen, twat, I could probably make it on my own, but I like you kids. Threatens him at gunpoint, and that's it. They're now his prisoner. Pat takes a bit of a liking to Mike. And they do some coke, and they
engage in some, horizontal boogie.
Yeah. And next thing you know, they're all coked up, and they go out into the village, and they start taunting these natives, who at this point had left them alone. They start toying with them, they start taunting with them, and at one point, Mike pulls out his gun and shoots one. Big, big mistake. And then we find out the real story, and that is that the Portuguese was not a Portuguese, it was an Indio, and the person that killed him, tortured him until he died, plucked out his eyeballs with a knife, was Mike.
Yes.
Mike's a sadistic fucker.
Yes.
And the next morning, Mike is gone, Pat is gone, and all the supplies are gone. So they're fucked. And we get to see another turtle death, the nowhere near as wild as Kalima Holocaust, and Joe succumbs, he dies. But what's hilarious, you can see his eye moving. Mm-hmm. You know, he's supposed to be totally dead.
Well, maybe he was in the last throes of that fever. I don't know.
Yeah. And then they realize the villagers have cursed them with a rotten papaya.
Ooh.
With a rotten papaya. And meanwhile, now the villagers are restless.
Now they're restless.
Now the shit's going down, man. They fucking drag the poor deceased Jar of the hut. They tear him asunder and they eat his innards raw. It's just crazy, man.
Crazy.
It's fucking disgusting. Rudy and Gloria are captured. They do find Mike. They tie him to a tree, and here comes the genital lover.
Yeah. He's rendered half the man he used to be, or 5 inches less, or whatever it is. And that was quite disgusting. Yeah.
But then they cauterize the wound, so he's able to survive.
And
for some reason, I'm thinking in my head, like, he should be basically singing castrato for the rest of the movie. But he's able to speak in his normal cadence, but what have you. Hilarious. At this point, they're now torturing these poor people, right? I mean, with the exception of Mike, he's not a poor person.
No.
They throw Pat and Gloria into a hole, and this is another hilarious thing. Gloria has an amazing idea of singing. Let's sing. To show the natives that we're not afraid of them. And they sing this ridiculous song. Rudy falls into the river. He gets his leg eaten off by piranhas.
Yeah, of all things. Yeah, of all the dangers in the jungle.
They then hack off his leg with a machete, and they eat it. But the worst is yet to come, because Pat
is strung up.
It was probably one of the most gruesome set pieces of
this
entire movie.
This is way worse than Linnea Quigley. No, getting him like this is
in Silent Night, Deadly Night.
Yes, this was something. She is strung up by her boobs.
Yeah.
And this is a disgusting scene. They
insert these two, I guess, large fishing hooks into her breast and suspend her by her boobs.
Mm-hmm.
It's well done. It looks realistic as fuck, and it's disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
Then they take Mike, who at this point has been... His penis has been lopped off.
There's no reason for living at this point.
His hand has been lopped off. They put him in this weird mechanism, they lob off the top of his head, and they eat his brains.
Yes.
Love it.
Yeah, incredible.
Love it. Just, you know, carnage. galore. So, at this point, you're probably listening to going, well, I'm either going to want to see, like, I really want to see this movie, or I want to stay well the fuck away from it. But hey, you know what? This is what you get with an Italian cannibal movie.
Yep.
So should we spoil the ending? Oh. I think we should, because it's kind of hilarious, right? So Gloria does make her way out of the Amazon and back to New York City. Amazingly enough, she's rescued by some monkey poachers. And the next thing we see is her standing up in front of her university doctoral committee, receiving
her
PhD.
Yeah.
And she's had a book published that actually states the fact that, and this is proving her thesis, that cannibalism in Amazonia is a myth. So she chooses to perpetuate cannibalism as a myth, despite the fact that her friends died, despite the fact that she witnessed it firsthand. She chooses to perpetuate this myth.
Yes, and interesting.
So what's the message there?
Well, the message there is, unlike the way more unsympathetic, I would argue, Dr. Butcher, M.D., Westerners come off very poorly in this. They basically, you know, the bulk of the murders are pinned on Mike. She, Gloria, is a mendacious, scheming, untrustworthy person. And again, unlike in Dr. Butcher, they're basically tourists who happen upon this jungle and are disgusted by what's taking place there. But here, the Westerners are just as involved in the depravity, and as is the case with Cannibal Holocaust.
Oh, yeah. So, like I said, I don't want to, because maybe we'll podcast Cannibal Holocaust in the future, but I mean, they are they're way more savage.
They're way culpable,
savages. So, I mean, Cannibal Holocaust is that movie definitely has that message, and yes. But I mean, well, you know, Rudy was sympathetic. I mean, Pat, not so much.
Not so much.
At the very end, they you know, you can see a bit of guilt in her face, but she'd rather get her doctorate and get published and actually tell the truth. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, look, these movies don't really have much of a message, you know? they're gratuitous. They're disgusting. They feature everything that you really should not be seeing on celluloid, but they serve a purpose, and they're popular, and they made a shitload of money in Italy, and not only that, they made a ton of money here in North America as well. The cannibal genre was massive for years and years and years.
And I guess we should say we're part of Eli Roth's Crypt TV family, although we've not yet had a chance to watch
The Green Inferno.
And Green Inferno's title has its genesis from this genre.
From Cannibal Holocaust.
Yes.
Because the actual working title for Cannibal Holocaust was The Green Inferno. They keep referring to the jungle as The Green Inferno. The Green Inferno. So what did we learn from Cannibal Ferox?
Jeez.
I'll start.
Okay.
I learned that when you see the most vile, the most hideous, the most horrendous killing of an animal for the purpose of a gratuitous scene in an exploitation film, that being the turtle killing in Cannibal Holocaust, you become immune. And then there was a turtle killing in this one. It was nothing. It wasn't nothing. It was hard to watch, but compared to what I saw in Cannibal Holocaust and some of the other killings in that movie, I just became immune. It's like when you see one turtle being killed in the most vile ways imaginable, all the other turtle deaths just don't seem to resonate as much. What does that say about me? I don't know.
Yeah, we'll find out, yeah.
What did you learn, Chris?
I learned that it's interesting that this was basically a shooting star when it came to genre. It really lasted for a couple of very, very short years. There, I think it was Antonio Margheriti, a.k.a. Anthony M. Dawson, who made a film called, I think, Cannibal Apocalypse. There's been several imitators.
There was Emmanuel and the Last Cannibals.
This really had a very fleeting sort of shelf life, and which is odd to me, because I think the jungle is an inherently scary place to be, with all the, again, the jaguars, the piranha, the pythons. There's so many things to be fearful of in addition to man-eating natives or whatever. So it's interesting that this.
What are you talking about? You got Babu, Mogwai, whatever, the Jungle Book. You know,
well,
it's the bare necessities.
I was thinking, turistas as well, where wandering around the jungle. But the jungle is a great place to set a film. But this genre did not have much of a life. And I'm a bit surprised.
Well, it was a supernova. It burned really brightly. It made a lot of money, and then it died, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
I'm just surprised. I guess because this was Eli Roth's tribute to this genre, but his tack on it was to give more of a background and a setup to the sort of social justice warriors, save the whales, people who are going into this, focusing on them rather than the...
Well, we have not seen the Green Inferno.
No. Rather than the horrors they would be subjected to. But it's an interesting take that he had on it. But again, we haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. You know, kudos to Roth for even... I mean, that movie was in distribution hell for years. He couldn't find a distribution. It was made in, like, 2012, 2011. It wasn't released till earlier, this year. I mean, you cannot make these movies today.
No.
You know what I mean? So the fact that... I wonder if there's an animal cruelty in Roth's movie. I don't think there is. I mean, you can't do it.
You can't. No.
There's
no way. He would be finished.
There is absolutely no way that these movies can be made today. Between that, the animal cruelty, the misogyny, the brutality, it's just... it's impossible. So yeah, I mean, there is a reason why this genre did eventually die out. That's changing sensibilities, and I think that for Eli Roth, whether you love him or hate him, kudos to him for being brave enough to revisit the cannibal genre.
For sure.
Star rating. Okay, I'm gonna give Cannibal Ferox 3 stars.
Likewise.
Yeah, Cannibal Holocaust is a 5-star movie to me. But this one pales in comparison. It's not the best cannibal movie that I've seen. It's not the worst. It's in the middle of the pack. I'm going to give it 3 stars.
Mm-hmm. 3 stars because, again, Umberto Lenzi is a bit of a... He has a few lulls, and his style of filmmaking is very sort of... almost haphazard and almost indifferent at times.
Well, if you think this is like... see Mountain of the Cannibal Gods. That
okay,
a lot
yeah.
of lulls, man. A lot of fast verbal moments, but all the same.
But all the same, very... I don't know if I would... if this would be my first foray into the genre. Yeah, I would probably delve into something a little more tame. And this is a film by no means tame, but by the standards of this and Cannibal Holocaust, much less so, it would be Dr. Butcher, M.D. So you get a little sense of...
But Dr. Butcher, M.D. is a weird film. I mean, it's like a hybrid cannibal zombie film. I don't really consider it a cannibal movie myself, to be honest with you.
But there are bamboo traps, and there's cannibalism in it, so it's a way to get your foot wet.
Exactly. And there's no animal cruelty in that one. So, yeah, I mean, definitely start off with Dr. Butcher, M.D. If you could take the scenes of gut munching in that one, then maybe you could then go right to the gusto, go to Cannibal Holocaust, and then start exploring the rest of the genre.
For sure.
And, let us know, man. Let us know what your thoughts are on the cannibal
genre. And definitely if you have any recommendations for any cannibal films that we really should see, because it basically we'll watch anything.
Or
we don't
a good
care.
Recipe for human flesh.
Yes. let us know. Reallyawfulmovies@gmail.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, awful_movies. And like us on Facebook. And check us out every weekend. Really Awful Movies Podcast. We'll definitely talk to you soon.
Take care.